Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's our conductor. We're in bad shape, especially now. Good evening and welcome to Erie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay, accompanied by Mighty Joe Young, who's lurking about. And we are both accompanied by...
by Tigger the Cat here on my desk, along with Dave Binkley from Witness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. New episodes coming.
Yep, since... Gar was not feeling good yesterday, and we're pretty sure he's not doing a live show tonight. Doggone it, Gar, will you get better already? CW has not yet made it, but who knows? That Lady of Mystery could pop in at any time. One never knows.
Anywhere, anytime.
Yep. And we're continuing our weekend with train wrecks. More stories about my personal life, eh?
That could be.
That was rude. No, we got a CBS Radio Mystery Theater for a perfect Saturday evening's listening pleasure.
Yes, it is definitely it's just nice to have those mystery theaters in here on the night that we're just a little bit shorter than Friday night, and still gives us plenty of play time as well.
Yeah.
Plenty of places.
Yeah, normally Friday is the two-hour show, and then Saturday we normally do 90 minutes unless we got a really good topic or a lot of good bonus material we want to share with you. And Fox B now joins good old Bob in the chat. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hi, hi. Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga. And so
there
on.
There you go.
And so forward.
I'm so proud of you, Dale. You can say that now.
It some days it's easier than others, let me tell you. The mind is going as I get older and as the night wears on.
Well, yeah, lots of things go as the night wears on, but anyway, we won't talk about that.
No.
Hey, there she is.
I hear a knock on the phone over there, as the man used to say. Hey, welcome.
Yep.
Welcome, welcome.
Hey, CW. Oh,
well, there she
goes.
She just dropped off. We're pretty sure it's CW. It looks like her phone number.
I don't think you'd dial that when you'd get anything, but she dials out on it. Yep.
You know,
111.
Actually,
111. Yes.
Dave, you do get something when you dial that.
What's that? What is it?
The number you have reached. 911 has been changed to a non-published number.
And that's what you get.
Mm-hmm. I think I have to hang up now.
Oh, God. You know, as we think CW has joined us now, we're pretty sure. Maybe could be.
Yes.
Ah, yes,
good. You're just in time for a little tale that... Dave had reminded me of it. It kind of slipped my mind. This is going back about 7 years ago.
Yeah, we were talking. Yeah, after the in the afterbirth there on the show last night, and Dale kept saying, "You know how uncomfortable you always were when we started doing this and all the talking." And I said, "Yeah," I said, "But you remember the first time I called? I called in nervous as heck. Now I've been doing." Radio for over 40 years now, and I've done the television thing at that point for you know 7-8 years.
Yeah,
and
you yourself had
I was
been
really nervous
live. Yeah,
I was really nervous calling in, and then when I called in, Dale, play that clip again. He played this as soon as I called in.
Yeah, the minute he picks, I open up his mic. I put
the number you have reached 911. Has been changed to a non-published number.
And Dave hung
so
up.
So I hung up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That
oh,
was actually
God.
Creepy Castle Days, wasn't it?
It was. That was Creepy Castle Days, yep.
Yeah. Oh, I felt like I said a bad
did
word.
Not
anyway,
say one word. I hung up.
Oh, yes.
I said the bad thing. I said the bad thing. Oh, God.
So that's why I said I might hang up a fog thing. Or if else you hang up. So.
Yep.
Although I do have my share of hang-ups. I do.
Yep. And we're so glad you joined us today, CW, because Dave had also brought to light yesterday's show. You know that train crashes were like a thing. It was like going to a sporting event, like a derby smash up or like a, you know what I mean? That they actually would deliberately crash locomotives like Gomez Adams, but life-size trains.
Yep, and they would sell tickets and make money from it using old locomotives that they were probably going to scrap anyway. Well, they were definitely scrap after that. So what they would do is they would build a track of anywhere from 100 feet to about a mile and take two old engines, point them towards each other, and at the proper time do the signal. The engineers would get behind the throttle, get it, the steam going, get it pushed forward, and at the very last second, jump out to hopefully safety as the planes crashed. And we heard about this one guy who did like 174, something like that, crashes. And he put dynamite and gasoline in the railroad car with it or something. So
spruce it up a little. Why not? See, I love that concept. Yep. And Dave mentioned that this sort of activity was so popular, there was actually a piece of music written. Was there not, David?
There was. And I did find it for tonight. And it was called the I lost it.
Great Crush Collision March.
Yes, it was the Crush Collision. He created a town for this, thinking 20,000 people would be there, CW, and 40,000 people showed up.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So here in the background, we'll do this. This is like a silent music movie. Silent movie music. But this is the actual ragtime tune that was written for this great event. I love it.
Oh my goodness. This is crazy.
It's hearing stuff like this is exactly why God will not let me hit the Mega Millions. That, right?
Because, yes, then Dale will go out, buy a couple of locomotives, and play with them all day long.
I think I would become that impulsive, yes. I think I would.
Yep. Yep.
And then make my horror host movie. But that's you know. That's a pipe dream. This is a happy little piece of music here.
Yeah, not bad, huh?
I
can almost see Gertie the dinosaur eating a train.
Wow. Ooh.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Looks like Gar is going to try to do a show tonight. That'd be great.
Well, that was 6 hours ago. I think we heard a little more recently than that.
Oh, did we? Did we?
Yeah,
okay.
That he feels like number two, train number two.
No, okay.
And, I got a feeling you're going to get pre-recorded. Give it a try. Either way, live, pre-recorded. It's still Gar the Ghoul. Hey.
That's right. And actually, the one he does a re-record or pre-recorded, it's cleaned up a little and done a few fun things to it to represent it. So it's not a waste of your time.
Nope. And
we lost our co-host,
but I bet you she'll be back
shortly. We'll see if we get, maybe after the song plays, by the time the song plays out, she will be back and then we can start into our CBS Radio Mystery Theater episode.
Yeah. Oh, we still got a minute and a half of this tune left, so.
Hey, nobody said they were short songs.
Yep.
Ragtime, it's funny because you'd think that, you know, it's like barbershop. I hear a few songs, they all start to sound the same to me, you know?
Yeah. This is still good,
but there
though.
There were a couple of...
I was just thinking how trains impacted, not only transportation in the United States as we expanded west, you know. There's the old story of the Golden Spike and Lincoln, you know, both coasts with a train long before those horseless carriages. And movies, early films. I mean, one of the earliest films was of length was The Great Train Robbery.
Yeah.
And CW rejoins us. Don't you?
We didn't restart the song, CW. It's still playing.
Yeah, it's that long.
Oh my god.
The ragtime song that never ended.
Yeah. It's exactly 4 minutes, 6 seconds long, which was probably the average length of a silent film back, if you go back far enough. No, seriously, a lot of George, what the hell, how do you pronounce his last name? Millier? George Méliès.
You got me.
Méliès, yes, the silent film producer, director guy, yeah.
The grandfather
for
of spatial effects.
I'm trying to think of Edison's, a lot of his movies were rather short.
Yeah.
When he finally got into the
Frankenstein movie was only maybe 10 minutes max.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they would. You know. First of all, it was hard to keep somebody standing at the Nickelodeon that long.
No doubt.
No, there were small theaters at the time, and interesting, what they did for air conditioning is they got huge blocks of ice. There was an empty space underneath the seating, and they would blow the air past the ice and into the theater. Back in the day.
Yep.
The theaters would get hot and sweaty with all them peoples and stuff. And we got a story to make you hot and sweaty, we hope. From CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Really?
Yeah.
I better listen to this again. I don't know.
Well, the title's intriguing enough. Bury Me Again.
Yeah.
Rather hoping we'd hear some facts about it.
You're waiting for some facts about it? Well, one fact is it was episode 169, and that it was originally broadcast on November 4th of 1974.
That's enough for me.
Your news and sports radio network.
And now WBEN Buffalo, broadcasting at 930 kilohertz, begins another day of service to the Niagara frontier. Our studio-to-transmitter link, WEF90, operates at 949 megahertz.
Tonight's Mystery Theater is brought to you by AM&A's, downtown, and six suburban stores, including the new Lockport store.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents...
Marshall. Won't you join me? It's dark and cozy inside here. The perfect place to curl up and listen to another tale of suspense and danger. This time, it's the story of a very unusual get-rich-quick scheme. But even though our story is educational and instructive, we don't want you to listen in the hopes of duplicating our hero's plan for instant wealth. You may find it difficult to begin where he begins, by dying a violent death. Because after that, what do you do for an encore?
Jerry, this is crazy. You'll never get away with it.
I am getting away with it.
But they'll find out.
No, they'll never catch on. And before I'm through, I'll be the richest dead man in the world.
mystery drama, Bury Me Again, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Henry Slessor and stars Michael Tolan. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Contact, the 12-hour code capsule. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
You've seen the Budweiser commercials on television, and maybe you've wondered how long people have been putting that famous Bud label on things. Well, not as long as the brewers of Bud have been putting things on the label. Things like a list of Bud's most important ingredients. Quote, brewed by our original process from the choicest hops, rice, and best barley malt. And things like the following statement. This is the famous Budweiser beer. We know of no brand produced by any other brewer which costs so much to brew and age. Our exclusive Beechwood aging produces a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability you'll find in no other beer at any price. Unquote. Yes, brewing beer right does make a difference. Read the Bud label. Taste the king of beers, and you'll agree, when you say Budweiser, you've said it all. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Gracious, elegant, luxurious sterling silver for radiant holiday tables. Join AMA's fantastic Silver Club plan for stupendous savings of 25 to 50%. On flatware from the finest silversmiths. No down payment, no finance charge, and up to 25 months to pay. 24-piece sets from Gorham. Services for 4, 8, or 12 by International. Lunch, 3-piece place weddings. Heirloom sterling patterns by Oneida Silversmiths. 16-piece starter sets from Reed & Barton. Trade in your present silver for savings on all patterns by toll. Choose Wallace Sterling's 24-piece service for 8 and get a chest free. And save on all open stock pieces from these famous companies. For gift giving or for your own, the elegance of sterling silver at low, low prices. Join AMA's Silver Club plan now. No down payment, no finance charge, and up to 25 months to pay. At all 7 AMA stores.
Some people think that the sound of a train whistle fading into the distance is probably the most melancholy sound in the world. But the people aboard those trains, which crisscross the country, can be melancholy too. As the crack Chicago Express streaks into the dark stretch of track between Union Station and the town of Fairmont, one of those passengers is staring gloomily into his own reflection in the soot-darkened window. It may be interesting to follow his thoughts.
-$10,000. -$10,000. That's where I'm at after 36 years of living. 36 years of working and sweating and dreaming dreams that never had a prayer of coming through. I owed McGinnis the same $6,000 I'd owed him for 2 years, even after making him payments amounting to twice that much. And there were the bills, the dentist, the credit card company, the automobile dealer. No, I could scratch that one. The car had been repossessed just the other day. That's why I was taking the train instead of driving to Fairmont. Not that I expected it to do much good. The chances of hitting my maiden Aunt Hilda for money were pretty slim. But when you're down, you'll try anything. And with the thought of McGinnis and his goons coming around for payday again, I was ready for anything at all. But maybe not quite ready for what happened. Pardon me, is this seat taken?
No. It's all right. Sit down.
Oh, thanks. You know, I haven't been in a dining car in years. I didn't know they still have them.
Heck, some people don't know there are still trains running.
I guess that's so. Everybody thinks in terms of flying these days.
I don't like to fly myself. Heck, for most trips, you don't save any time anyway. By the time you get to and from the airport...
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, you do a lot of traveling?
Not if I can avoid it.
Well, I can't, unfortunately. I'm one of those traveling salesmen you hear about. But you know something? I never met a farmer's daughter in my life.
How do you get a drink here?
I've been wondering that for the last 15 minutes.
Well, it looks like you've got a drink.
Oh, sure. That's my own private stock. I always carry a pint bottle with me on these long train trips just to break the monotony. Yeah. Come on, give me a water glass.
Hey, that's very kind of you.
My pleasure. Well, here's looking at you.
Right. And here's to the farmer's daughter. Maybe you'll meet her this trip.
Just hope my wife doesn't find out.
My dinner companion wasn't the most scintillating conversationalist in the world, but he was company, and I guess I needed that. I also didn't mind the private stock he carried. Every drink aboard that train cost a buck and a half. So when he told me that he had still another bottle, I suggested we continue our talk in the club car. The only thing wrong was that he did all the talking. And the more he drank, the more he talked.
Money, my friend. M-U-N-N-Y. That's the answer to the whole darn thing. You take my word for it. Somebody gives you that happiness baloney, you just walk away, pal. Walk away.
You don't have to convince me, brother. I've already been convinced.
Listen. You ever figure it out? I mean, figure out one of those things like assets and liabilities?
That's all I've got, liability.
You know what I mean, like how much you're worth, how much you're really worth. Well, I can tell you, you, me, everybody else, we're worth more dead than alive. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right.
You betcha.
That's what insurance is all about.
You betcha. That's what I mean. That's what insurance is all about.
You're not an insurance salesman, are you?
No, not me. No, I'm not a liquor salesman either. Too bad about that, isn't it? Hey, bottle's almost empty. Don't worry, friend. Don't you worry. There's more where I came from, fella.
Plenty more whiskey, plenty more talk. Until something happened that sobered up the evening fast. I don't know how long I was unconscious. Judging from the things that were happening around me, it couldn't have been more than a few minutes after the crash. After the express had plowed into the freight train and somehow been switched into a path.
I felt lousy, but I was still in one piece. When the impact came, I fell against the leather sofa and it toppled over me. When the hard stuff came down, I had a built-in bomb shelter. Nobody else around me was so lucky. I saw the traveling salesman, and I knew he was never going to meet that farmer's daughter.
Then, I saw something else. The money that peeked out of his wallet, still nice and green. I had the sense to grab the wallet before I crawled out of the overturned car. I stood up as soon as I felt cold air on my face. Within seconds after I left the wreck, the tiny fires that had been burning all around got together in one giant ball of flame. I never saw such a hungry fire in my life. I knew there wasn't going to be much left of anything or anyone. And then I saw the people. They were all over the place, dozens of them, flashing searchlights, shouting to each other.
Hey, mister! Hey!
Yeah? What is it?
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm all right. I just a little shook up.
Well, they're putting up a first aid station down this line. Want me to help you over there?
No, I'm all right, thanks.
No, I'd better take you there.
Oh, well, okay. Thanks. Hey, listen, what town is this?
We're just outside of Hopkins Falls. We heard the crash all the way to town. It sounded like a bomb went off.
She took me to the first aid station, and a guy in a dirty white uniform helped me inside.
What's your name?
I can't think. I'm all mixed up.
Yes, well, maybe you'd better lie down for a while, mister.
No. I'm okay.
We're setting up a hospital station. We'll have a car take you there if you like. It'll be a while before the ambulance gets here.
No, I'm not hurt. I'm just...
I'm just mixed up. Is it far to town?
You're really in no condition to walk.
Just tell me how far it is.
Well, about a quarter of a mile in that direction.
Thanks. That's all I want to know. Well, Hopkins Falls wasn't much of a town. There were a bunch of frame houses leaning on each other for support. And the only electric sign in the place was the one I wanted. It said hotel. It took me quite a while to find the desk clerk lurking behind the rubber plants in the lobby. He looked at me curiously and spun the register in my direction. I chuckled when I saw the empty page. When I asked for a room with bath, he almost swallowed his store teeth. I signed the register Benedict Arnold and went up to the shabby room on the second floor. When I closed the door behind me, all I could do was head for that bed. The springs gave in with a rusty sigh, but I couldn't care less. Sleep hit me like a TKO. I woke up the next morning with a pain in my hip. At first, I thought I'd broken a bone, but then I realized it was only the bulge of the wallet in my trouser pocket. I counted the money. $110. It would be enough for a little while. Then I picked up the phone. Hello, this is Mr. Arnold, room 202. You got any room service in this place? Yeah, breakfast. Yeah, that's exactly what I want. Fried eggs, bacon, toast, coffee. How about the morning paper? The paper in yet? Any news about the wreck? Fine, good. Be sure to send that up, too. The breakfast was no better than I expected. The toast was soggy, the coffee watery, and the eggs almost inedible. But the local paper, that was something else. The train wreck had taken over the whole rag, all four sheets of it. It was probably the biggest news that ever hit this whistle stop. I turned to the casualty list. It wasn't complete, but it had what I wanted. So I grabbed the phone. I want to make a call, long distance. Hello, operator? I'd like to place a call to Chicago, person to person, Mrs. Gerald Horton, 1240 Lafayette Street. Now, I'm in room 202. The name is Arnold. First initial B. Myrna?
What?
Is that you, Myrna?
Who is this?
Is anybody with you? It's Jerry.
Jerry? Where are you calling from?
A town called Hopkins Corner or something like that. Listen, are you alone?
Well, yes, of course I'm alone. But why are you talking this way?
Because this hotel has walls like tissue paper, that's why. Myrna, did you read about the wreck?
The wreck? What are you talking about?
The train, the Chicago train. It hit something, a stalled freight train. Dozens of people were killed.
Oh, my God. Jerry, are you okay?
Quiet. Yes, I'm okay. I got a little banged up. Nothing serious.
Oh, thank God. But why aren't you in a hospital?
I don't need a hospital. I told you I'm not hurt. I'm just dead.
What?
You heard me. I'm dead, honey.
Well, what are you talking about?
Myrna, listen carefully. There's been a mistake out here. A big mistake. And we're going to make the most of it, understand?
No.
Well, listen, and you will. They got me down on the local casualty list. They think I'm dead. Do you get what I'm saying? They've listed me as dead.
But how can that be?
Well, I must have helped it along a little. I switched wallets with a guy. His was fatter than mine, but he had no use for it anyway. But then the whole train caught fire. He must have been burned beyond recognition. But the wallet was okay.
Why, that's awful. You'll have to tell them.
No, I don't have to tell them a thing. Why should I?
But what for?
No, now listen. What's the only valuable thing we own?
What?
You know about the insurance policy.
Yes.
$75,000. $75,000. More money than we could save in a lifetime.
But we can't collect it. Not if you're alive.
I'm going to stay dead, Myrna. Understand?
Jerry.
You're going into mourning for me. Then you're going to get a check for $75,000 from the insurance company. You're going to slap that money into the bank. Then we're going to wait a while and leave town. You and me and the money makes three. Now do you get it?
Jerry, that's illegal.
What do you mean illegal? We're only ripping off an insurance company, honey. That's what I call fair game.
Well, we've just heard an old adage disproved, that dead men tell no tales. Obviously, here is one dead man who is doing exactly that, a tale of deceit and deception, and very possibly danger. We'll find out how good a job our friend does of staying dead when I return shortly with Act Two.
The strangest thing happened last night when I was walking home from work. It was almost dark, and then I saw someone. A woman struggling to change a tire. I stopped. She stiffened. I think she was afraid of me. And then something strange happened. We talked. I mean, really talked. There by the roadside, changing a tire. She told me how scared she was. She wanted help, but was afraid of the kind of help she might get. I told her I had fears like that, too. And I think she understood. Then she drove away, and I didn't even get her name. But I listened to her talk, and she listened to me, too. And you know, that made me feel good. A word for active listening from the Mennonite churches.
There you go. They wear cool clothes. A lot of black. All right. that was part one of...
Talk.
Bury Me Again.
Yep. I smell some insurance fraud coming on, do I?
Yeah. Why not? Perfect opportunity. Perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
Yep. At least this one wasn't like The Fugitive like last night. That was cool.
Yeah.
I thought we were listening to The Fugitive for a minute. There's a train wreck. Guy was a prisoner. Broke away.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that guy was a real criminal.
Yes.
In last night's show.
And he didn't have a one-armed man he was chasing. Yeah.
And it was William Powell, by the way.
Yes. That was William Powell.
Yeah, we had him back, CW. Yeah. Our man Godfrey.
I always get those. Yeah. Our man Godfrey. Since William Powell was the Powell that didn't.
Uh-oh. Yeah, your mic is Powell. Cutting out, my friend. Your mic is cutting out.
Uh-oh. Let me get some.
You're back.
You're back.
Okay. There you are. Okay.
So William Powell is not the Powell that.
That sang.
Yeah.
No,
Dick Powell was the singer. Dick Powell was the singer.
Yep.
All right. This story's shaping up pretty nice.
It is.
I always like an opportunist.
As all insurance frauds, without Johnny Dollar, something messes up.
I like
up,
it.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Insurance fraud, speaking of which, I'm thinking, you know, perhaps Moose and Elk, the lawyers that...
That's right.
We lost there she is.
Yeah, we lost you for a half a moment again. But yeah, Moose and Elk would be a good team to investigate.
No, they probably join in on it.
Let's see.
They want a percentage. They want a percentage.
Yeah. If there's going to be fraud, we want in on it.
That's right. Right.
There'll be no fraud without me. Sounds like something Groucho would say.
True.
It's time.
Whatever
okay,
it is,
time.
It's on against us. Let's enjoy part two of Bury Me Again from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Still no goat.
Jerry Horton didn't get to see much of the town of Hopkins Falls. He spent the next few days in his room, thinking, drinking, and making plans. It was a pity. The quiet, rustic atmosphere and the countryside might have soothed the savage temperament of the man. But Jerry Horton was far too excited by an image of the future. However, since this is Jerry's story, we'll let him tell you the rest.
The $110 lasted me 5 days. It bought me a new suit of clothes at the local emporium, my room and meals, and a bus ticket back to Chicago. I bought myself a cardboard valise, too. I figured a traveling man with a suitcase was less obvious in a crowd. On Friday morning, I put the local phone book, the Gideon Bible, and a couple of hotel towels into the valise and said goodbye. It was a long bus ride, but it seemed short to me. I had all kinds of things to think about. Plans for spending that money. Thinking about McGinnis's face when I finally handed him the $6,000 I owed him, all in one neat bundle. Hey, that was an idea. I put it all in $1 bills and make him stay up half the night counting it. And if I know McGinnis, that's exactly what he would do. And then I was back in Chicago, ready to call good old Myrna.
Hello?
Myrna?
Jerry!
For God's sake, don't say my name.
I'm sorry.
Are you alone?
Yes, I'm alone. Where are you?
At the bus terminal.
Oh, I've been so scared. You have no idea how scared I've been.
What for?
I'm just so nervous about the whole thing.
What's been happening?
Well, they sent your body back. The funeral was Tuesday.
Good. Great. Was it a nice crowd?
Well, not too big. Sandy and Jane couldn't make it, but Dorothy and Tom were there, and Mother was going to fly in from L.A., but I told her not to bother. I mean, well, it seemed silly.
You didn't tell her anything?
Oh, no, of course not. Do you think I'm crazy? Do you think I could tell her that it was some perfect stranger I was putting in the ground? Oh, Jerry, it was awful. I mean, we picked out that plot together and everything. I was going to be right next to you.
Never mind that stuff. We've got more important things to worry about. Living things.
Oh, what are you going to do now?
I don't know yet. I'm broke. I don't even have enough money for a hotel room.
But you can't come here.
I know I can't come there, but I've got to eat. So you got to help me. Look, you put about $300 in an envelope and address it to John Nolan, care of the Montgomery Hotel. Did you get that name?
Yes. John Nolan, Montgomery Hotel.
Don't write it down. You can remember it. Yeah, John Nolan, care of the Montgomery. I'll check in there this morning. Don't try to reach me. That's just asking for trouble. You got it?
But what if somebody recognizes you?
Don't worry about it. You know the Montgomery's out of our class. So try and make it small bills, okay? No use attracting more attention than I have to. Okay?
Yes. Okay. Oh, Jerry, I hope we're doing the right thing.
You'll see how right it is when that money comes in, Myrna.
I spent that night in the bus terminal. I hunted out the softest bench and stashed my things under it. When I woke up, I had 19 bones out of place. But I was still feeling chipper. I went into the terminal lavatory and washed up as best I could. It was a fine, sunny day out, and the weather suited my mood. You know how it is. Some days, everything goes right. I walked the dozen blocks to the Montgomery Hotel. It was out of my class, all right. Was, that is. A chunk of white sandstone rising 40 stories from the street in straight, clean lines, ringed by a fence of evenly spaced trees. The doorman looked like he'd won every decoration from the Congressional Medal on down. It felt good walking on the wine-colored carpet that led into the plush lobby, knowing there was money and a hot shower waiting for me inside. I walked up to the desk like a bored millionaire, and scratched my unshaven cheek in a kind of wry manner, like I was a playboy who was out on the town all night.
Yes, sir. May I help you?
I'd like a room, please.
Did you have a reservation?
No, I don't. But can you fix me up with something anyway?
Yes, sir, I'm sure we can. If you'll just sign the register.
I believe you may be holding some mail for me. I told some friends I'd be stopping here.
What name, sir?
Nolan, John Nolan.
Well, let me check. No. No, I don't see anything for... Oh, wait a minute. Here it is.
Oh, thank you very much.
Front.
My room at the Montgomery wasn't fancy. Just a nice room with not much of a view. But I liked it better after a shower and shave. And when I flopped on the big sofa bed, I opened the envelope, lit a cigarette, and counted the money. There were 240 bucks in it, and a note that said, "Sorry, all I could get, M." Well, it didn't really matter. It would be enough to take care of me for a few days. Then the insurance agent would be around to see Myrna, and money like this would be only car fare. I felt so good that I decided to spend some of it on the best meal I could buy in the hotel restaurant. I was just finishing up when my luck threatened to turn.
Well, for Pete's sake, it's Lefty. It's Lefty, junior high school, right?
I'm sorry. I think you must have the wrong guy.
Hey, did I change that much? Yeah, I guess maybe I have. I don't know where all the hair went. Down the sink, I guess. Douglas is the name, remember? Kenny Douglas.
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Oh, I can't be that wrong. I've got a good memory for faces. Not so great on names, maybe, but they called you Lefty because of the baseball team.
I'm sorry, mister. I must look like this friend of yours, but I'm not him. I never went to Union High. I never went to any high school, as a matter of fact.
Well, I could have sworn.
And as you
I
can see, I'm eating with my right hand.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, but you sure look like the guy, or the way he would look 20 years later. I'm sorry to bother you.
By the time the guy had left my table, I was covered in sweat from head to foot. Oh, I remember Kenny Douglas all right. I think I still had his monogram cigarette case in his shoebox at home. He was a snotty rich kid. It had been a pleasure to rip him off. But right now, it was relief to see him leave. And a relief to switch the fork back to my left hand. After the third day, I started getting anxious.
Hello?
Myrna, it's Jerry. Can you talk?
No, not right now. Some of the girls are over, you know.
All right. Just be careful what you say. Just answer yes or no, understand?
I can hardly hear you.
Now, just be quiet and listen. Has the insurance company contacted you at all?
Yes. There's a man here only this morning.
A man?
Yes, from the claim department.
Well, why are they sending somebody from the claim department? There's nothing to claim. I'm dead.
Well, he was here just the same. He said it might take a while before the payment was made. He was very nice.
I don't care if he was tall, dark, and handsome. What's this baloney about it taking a while?
Well, it's a lot of money. $150,000 is an awful lot of money.
What are you talking about? Our policy was for $75,000.
Yes, but there's a double indemnity clause, you see? I mean, the face value doubles because of you being... I mean, because of the accident.
$150,000? My God, that's a fortune. We're rich. We're really rich.
The only thing is, they have to make sure.
Sure of what?
The identification, don't you see? Everybody was so burned up in that terrible
wreck. For Pete's sake, I was identified. I read my name in the paper on the casualty list.
Well, he said it'd be all right. He said it was just a matter of a couple of days.
It better be all right. I'm running out of cash. I won't be able to afford the hotel bill.
Well, I just can't send you any more money. I don't have a cent.
All right. All right, then. But when you get that check in your hands, you better get on that phone right away. Understand?
Yes, I understand.
John Nolan, Montgomery Hotel. Don't do anything with the money. Just wait for my instructions.
All right. I'll wait. But I'm still so scared.
$150,000. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't imagine money like that. I kept seeing the way that check would look, that long string of numbers. I began to see visions of things I'd wanted since the day I was born. It was all I could do to keep myself from running down to the auto showroom and placing an order for the biggest, shiniest car in the window. But I had to wait. The money wasn't there yet. There was still one more step to go. I was a little worried about Myrna's visitor from the insurance company. But I knew that things would work out all right. This was my lucky time of life, and nothing was going to spoil it. Then, just one day later...
Oh, Mr. Nolan.
Yes?
There was a call for you while you were out this afternoon. It was a lady, Mrs. Nolan, I think.
Uh-huh. Thanks very much. My hands were shaking so bad that I could hardly dial Myrna's number. When she didn't answer right away, I started to panic. She wouldn't be calling me unless it was all set. She must have the money in her hand, and I had to make sure that it went to the right place. It wasn't that I suspected Myrna of any hanky-panky. I had no reason to suspect her of anything. But who knows what someone will do when they're looking at a piece of paper that says $150,000.
Hello?
Myrna, it's me.
Oh, thank heavens. I was getting so worried.
Where were you? The phone must have rung 10 times.
Oh, I just got in this second. I was down at the insurance company.
You went there to get the money?
They asked me to come down, Jerry. I was so upset. I almost fainted.
Well, don't worry about it. You're the grieving widow. You're supposed to be upset.
But you don't understand. They didn't call me about the money. Only about... Oh, well, I don't know what you call it. Exhume something.
What?
Jerry, they want to open your grave.
They can't do that. It's against the law.
They said they wanted my cooperation. They asked me to sign a paper.
Don't do it. Don't sign a thing. They can't force you to do such a thing.
Well, they said that if I didn't sign it, they'd have to get a court order.
They're bluffing. They can't do anything like that. They've already identified that body as me, and once is good enough.
Oh, Jerry, what should I do? What should I tell them? Should I get a lawyer?
No, don't get a lawyer yet. Let me think. Let me figure out something and call you back. There's got to be something I can figure out.
As Robert Burns once told us, the best laid plans of mice and men oft go astray. Even the plans of dead men, it seems. But I think we have a resourceful gentleman here who won't let a mere detail stand between him and his dream. Will the insurance investigators create a rude awakening? Or will our hero find some way to put the number 150,000 into his little green book? Just wait right there, and I'll return with the answers shortly in Act 3.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love. But give your cold to contact. The sooner the better.
The common cold is a rotten thing. You miss so much. Sneezing, drips, and congestion can drag you down. Then, ask yourself the contact question. 6 for 3 or 1. You'd need 6 cold tablets, 2 every 4 hours, or 3 ounces of Cold's liquid, 1 every 4 hours, or just 1 contact for up to 12 hours continuous relief of those symptoms. That's daytime, then nighttime relief. Both the others have things for aches and fever, and the liquid, something for coughs. Not found in Contact 600 Tiny Time Pills.
Give your call to Contact.
6 or 3 or 1. Take Contact. Only as directed.
Who knows what troubles lurk in the hearts and minds of consumers? The man from the Metabusiness Bureau knows.
Oh, Irene, this new sofa is gone already, and...
Why, what's that inside the cushion, John? It's, oh my heavens, it's crumpled newspaper. How did we ever buy a sofa like this? What can we do?
I'll tell you what to do.
Who are you, sir?
I'm the man from your Better Business Bureau. When you shop for furniture, it's what's inside that counts. Fancy coverings can hide a variety of shoddy workmanship. Read the law label that must be stitched to the furniture. It will tell you the filler material used and buy from a reputable dealer.
Oh, thank you, sir. We'll know better next time.
Not at all, ma'am. Just another tip from your Better Business Bureau.
And speaking of shoddy workmanship, we're back.
Yeah, I've been doing some figuring during this last segment here. Because I was just thinking, you know.
Is this like a Garculator thing?
Shows, well, in a sense. We've been doing shows about train wrecks. Well, how common are train wrecks? Do you ever stop and think about that? I got some numbers from the U.S. Department of Transportation. And over the last, this is just the last 10 years, there were 19,256 wrecks. 2,466 fatalities and 8,620 accidents. This is just over the last 10 years.
Whoa.
In the 20...
Last 10 years.
Is that global numbers? Is that global numbers?
No, I think it's just here. No, that's from the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Wow.
So that's for right here in our country.
Yikes.
You hear every once in a while about a train wreck, but 19,000 in 10 years? That's way more than I had even imagined.
Yeah,
and how
trains?
Much plausible a stories like these could be, you know?
Yeah. Apparently, it's a much more frequent occurrence than that. Although we've had a few here in Wellington since I've lived here. We've had a few. There's
Dave,
main train tracks.
What have you been doing? Have you been hanging around those tracks again, doing something?
I told you to keep your bathroom window drawn.
Dave Gomez Binkley. Dave Gomez Binkley.
Gomez Binkley.
Not me.
He said with that delightful look of glee in his eye.
I don't even like cigars.
Yeah. Well, they certainly got those insurance companies correct. I mean, they will dig you up, set you up, and say, look, he's a little stiff, but I don't think he's dead. So we're just going to have to wait on that policy.
This pet is dead. No, he's not. He's pining.
He's not.
He's pining.
No, he's not, dear. He's
for the fjords. He's pining for the fjords.
There you are.
Oh, good heavens.
Oh, my.
Little Monty Python action in between segments of Bury Me Again. This is a pretty exciting tale. This guy got himself into a mess, but he thinks he's going to cash in big. Double indemnity yet.
Yeah, he thinks a body can't be pulled back up. Give me a break.
Well, I mean, they didn't have forensics as much as they do. They had rudimentary forensics, but you leave somebody in a train wreck burning long enough.
Yeah.
The only way you're safe is total ash or, you know, accidentally falling into that active volcano.
Yeah, true. Nowadays, yeah. Because sooner or later, the truth will come out in pieces of hearts. Ew.
If there are pieces and parts left, yes.
Yes.
Yes. But I did see him get abducted by that UFO. He's up there. He's gone. Okay, we got a satellite up there. We're going to check it out, but you're still not getting that check.
Yep.
And we touched on it earlier. I do like how trains played out in a lot of films that I like. There were those futuristic trains in Metropolis, and you had King Kong tearing apart a train.
Oh, yeah.
An elevated rapid transit. let's see, what else? I think...
Predator 2, you had...
The
subway. Yeah, the subway train scene, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and let's see, what else? The Hitchcock film, The Lady Vanishes, I think.
Well,
Vanishes
on a train. And And Strangers on the Train. Yeah, both of those. Yeah.
Murder on the Orient Express.
Ah, indeed. And one of the Basil Rathbone adaptations took place on a train. Yeah, one of the Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, Terror by Night.
Terror by Night, that's the one
Terror by
I was
Night.
Trying to think of.
Yeah. So trains, while they're not smashing up all over the place, especially around Dave and Dave, they have made their mark. Well, I don't know. I guess they are.
Yeah, the
planes
six,
are safer.
We hosted a movie called The Six Sinners. It was a UK movie. There were at least six train crashes in that one.
Cool.
Okay, there were five and a toy train crash. So, but still, a toy train crash is still a crash. Sorry.
Yes. Yes, I will. We will accept that for a crash.
Yes, that is. The judges will allow that.
The judges will allow that. Rule that's in bounds. That's fair play. Whatever.
So I don't know now. See, they've had snakes on a plane. Can we have snakes on a train?
If you do that, then you have to go to put snakes in an automobile after the plane and train and automobile.
Oh, yes. That one. Love that movie.
And of course, Polar Express.
Polar Express.
Can't forget.
We forgot about the classic, The Ghost Train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the Ridley. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Many a Western, too.
Yeah.
Two Mules for Sister Sarah. He has to blow up a train off a bridge. Yeah. And Shirley MacLaine had to help him aim his gun because he was, like, stinking drunk, I think, or something. And injured.
No, and she's the one who has to climb up the trestle and plant the dynamite in there.
Exactly. In her disguise as a nun. Turns out she was kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum in morality land.
Yeah.
I have a friend who is actually making a documentary about there was a big train wreck, I think just outside of Elyria or something, where the entire bridge collapsed. He's doing a whole documentary, which will be on PBS. He's been working on this thing for like 7-8 years, and I think he's hopefully just about wrapping it up. But yeah, so I will let everybody know when that comes on, because usually when it's on PBS, a lot of stations, even outside this area, pick it up. So
hopefully
it'll be cool.
Yes, would like to hear about this.
Yes.
Well, the guy who works on my show a lot, Rick Elliott, went and did a lot of filming with him as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Oh, and there's a very substantial train scene in the original black and white Manchurian Candidate.
Ah,
okay.
Mm-hmm. That's with Jamie Lee Curtis's mom.
Now that you brought up Sinatra.
Oh, yeah.
His Suddenly movie was about the president coming into Suddenly, California, I think it was, on a train.
That's right.
And they were going to shoot him because he was coming in on a train. California.
There you go.
That's very, I don't know, prophetic, since he was a big stomper for JFK. So kind of prophetic that film was. That and The Manchurian Candidate. I think they even held back on releasing The Manchurian Candidate for a while.
Yeah, I think it was on and they yanked it, I think.
I think they held back on Dr. Strangelove for the same reason, I think. Didn't they?
I don't know. Did that come before or after either JFK or the Cuban Missile Crisis?
I think it was around JFK time, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so it had already been filmed. I'm not sure whether they stopped it or delayed the Manchurian Candidate. But I know Frank Sinatra was filming with the Rat Pack. He was filming Robin in the Seven Hoods when the news was given that JFK was shot and assassinated.
Yep. Dark, dark times.
Most definitely. But on to lighter fare now.
Yeah.
Guy is trying to give it to
the dark story here. Let's finish this dark story. Bury Me Again from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. We'll be back someday. With a gun, you know.
It's a time of tension for the man in the Montgomery Hotel. Now every hour seems to stretch ahead interminably. The watch ticking on his wrist seems to have hands made of lead. But as he paces his hotel room, smoking endless cigarettes, downing pots of lukewarm hotel coffee, he seems to have arrived at no solution to his dilemma. And then... Yes?
It's me.
I told you not to call me direct. I said always leave a message with the desk clerk.
I've got to talk to you.
All right. What's happening?
They got the order, Jerry.
Oh, Lord.
There was nothing I could do to stop them. They said I was wrong to have you buried so fast, that there was too much money involved.
Listen, you don't think they suspect anything?
No, I don't think so. I've been careful, I swear I have.
Those insurance guys are sharp, you know.
I'm telling you, I haven't done anything wrong. I've been crying my eyes out just as if you really got killed. Everybody keeps telling me that I'm taking it too hard. What they don't know is that I'm scared.
All right. Just calm down. Maybe things aren't that bad.
How could they be worse?
You didn't see what I saw after that train wreck. After the explosion... They had pictures in the local papers. The victims didn't look human anymore, I'm telling you. They were just like pieces of charcoal.
How awful.
Even if they open that coffin, they won't see anything but a handful of ashes. So stop worrying.
Are you sure, Jerry?
I'm sure. At least I think I'm sure.
And what if they figure out that it's somebody else?
Okay, so we lose the bread. The wrong man got identified. It wasn't anybody's fault, right? And as for me, I guess I'll be just another runaway husband.
Jerry, you don't mean that.
No, don't worry. You'll be seeing me again. Broke as usual. Unless our luck holds. Pray that it holds, baby.
Oh, Jerry, you never call me baby anymore.
Never mind what I call you. You call me the minute anything happens. The next couple of days were the worst of my life. There was nothing I could do but concentrate on that phone. Stare at it, waiting for it to ring. After a while, I started yelling at it, ordering it to ring, like some kind of nut. But it stayed silent. It just stared back at me until I got so jumpy that I had to get out of the room. But I wasn't on the street for 5 minutes before I found myself heading back for the lobby and demanding to know if there'd been any calls for me. The answer was always no. And then, on the morning of the third day after Myrna's call, when I wasn't even thinking about the phone, it rang. Hello?
Jerry, it's me.
I've been going nuts here. Why didn't you call me before?
There was nothing to say. You told me to call you when something happened.
Well, something must have happened by now. Did they exhume the body?
Yes, they did.
Well, go on.
Jerry, it was just like you said. I didn't see the body, but the insurance man told me about it. He said he felt awful describing it to me, but he thought I should be told. Jerry, there were only ashes in that coffin.
Thank the Lord.
I was so scared. But it's all right now. Everything is all right.
No, it won't be all right until you've got that money.
But I do have it.
What?
That's what I'm calling about. I've got $150,000. I never knew there was that much money in the world.
Okay. Okay, now listen close. Here's the way we're going to handle it. The first thing you do is deposit the check to the regular account.
Yeah, I was going to do that this morning. I was so afraid to have such a big check in the house.
All right, so deposit it. And then go to the Chemical National Bank, the one on Clover Street near the arch. You know the one I mean?
Yes, but what for?
Just listen and do what I say. You go to that bank and say you want to open a joint savings account for you and your husband. Only now, you're Mrs. John Nolan. Understand?
But I can't open an account by myself.
Yes, you can sign all the papers there and then collect the forms that I have to sign. Understand?
Yes, I see.
Put all the forms in an envelope and send them to me here at the Montgomery.
All right. I'll get them in the mail as soon as possible.
No, you can drop them off in person at the desk. The Montgomery is right around the corner from the bank. Leave it at the front desk for Mr. Nolan.
But I don't see how that'll work. Why don't I just cash the check?
Shut up and listen to me. This is the safest way to handle it. Once you have the money deposited in our regular checking account, you can write a check for the whole amount to John Nolan. There. Now do you get it?
You mean I deposit the money in the new account?
That's just what I mean. And after that, well, I'll let you know the rest of the plan. Have you got it all straight?
Yes, Jerry. I'll do just what you said.
That's my girl.
It was cloud nine time. I felt like I was floating, like I was drunk on expensive champagne. And it wouldn't be too long before I was. I was mentally throwing out every shabby suit in my closet and replacing them with custom-made threads. I was so stuffed with dreams that the next few hours passed by in a pink haze. Hello?
Mr. Nolan, I have an envelope here for you. Shall I send it up?
Yeah, thanks. Send it right up. Myrna had followed her instructions perfectly. I filled out the joint account application, signed John Nolan in a sweeping hand, and then took the forms to the Chemical National Bank myself. I wanted them to get a good look at me, because they were going to be seeing me again very soon. Getting cool again, isn't it?
Yes.
Looks like it'll be a short summer, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. Now, let me see. How much are you depositing initially, Mr. Nolan?
Well, my wife will be making the first deposit tomorrow morning.
Uh-huh.
It'll probably be a big one. See, we're buying a house, and so we're cashing in some stocks.
Oh, I see.
It's too bad we won't be leaving it in the account long enough to collect interest. I might have to withdraw most of it pretty quick.
Well, easy come, easy go.
That's right. Easy come, easy go. She didn't know how funny that was. And 2 days later, when I strolled back into the Chemical National Bank, the joke was all ready for the punchline. I had the passbook in my hand and happiness in my heart when I walked across the marble floor to the teller's cage marked M-N-O. I caught a glimpse of the bank guard's dark blue uniform. He looked fat and lazy. I stepped up to the window and started to say hello to my girlfriend of the day before. But then I remembered I had a withdrawal slip to make out first. So I smiled apologetically and went to the glass-top counter in the center of the room. I copied the number from the passbook and filled out the amount. $20,000. No, I wasn't going to withdraw at all. I was smarter than that. All that bread going in and out so fast, that would attract too much notice. I was going to chip away at it, a piece at a time.
Oh, hello. I see you didn't waste any time.
Nope. Got to get that deposit down today.
Uh-huh. $20,000. Well, I'm sure you want a bank check for that, won't you?
Yeah, I'd better. I wouldn't want to walk around with that much cash.
Oh, one moment. I have to see an officer.
Take your time.
Mr. Nolan?
Yes?
I'm Bill Harkness, assistant manager. Would you mind stepping into my office a moment?
What for?
Oh, it's just a technical matter regarding your account. Yes,
Why, what's the matter with my account? The money's on deposit, isn't it? It says so in my passport.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Everything's in order. But you see, when any large withdrawal is made, we're required to fill out certain forms.
Well, I never heard of anything like that.
It won't take long, I promise you.
Well, okay.
This way, please. Now, if you'll sit right here, I'll have the form in just a moment.
Well, I'd waited almost a month already for this, so I figured I could wait another few minutes. The only thing is, I didn't realize what I was really waiting for until the door opened and Harkness returned. This time he had another man with him and a woman who I supposed was his secretary.
Sorry to have been so long, Mr. Nolan.
Well, that's okay. Just let me get my check and get out of here. I've got things to do.
What sort of things, Mr. Nolan?
Oh, I didn't get your name.
I'm Lieutenant Whalen. Police?
Police? Now, wait a minute. Are you implying that I'm doing something illegal by withdrawing money from my own account?
You're doing something illegal, all right, Mr. Nolan, so why don't you tell us all about it?
Listen, if this is an arrest,
Sure, I know. You've got rights. You don't have to say anything to incriminate yourself.
Well, I've got a few things to say, let me tell you.
And who are you?
What's the matter, Jerry? Don't you know your own wife? Your own baby?
Hey, now, wait a minute. My name is Nolan. John Nolan, and I can prove it. I've got a driver's license here. Look at it.
And I'm Myrna. Your own loving wife, Jerry. How come you don't recognize me?
I know why, Mr. Nolan. Because you really are John Nolan, and the real Jerry Horton is dead, killed in that train wreck.
I should have guessed it the first time you called me. You imitated Jerry's voice, okay, and you always talked low. But I should have known you weren't my husband.
You took his wallet. That's how you knew how to reach his wife. And Mr. Horton must have told you about his insurance policy.
But how did it happen? How did you find out?
It was the autopsy. It was when they dug up the body again and proved that it was my husband.
It was the teeth that did it. And that's how we identify the body, by the dental work.
As soon as the insurance people paid me that money, I knew that it had to be Jerry in that coffin. And that it was going to be somebody else in this bank.
Now, we told Mrs. Horton to go along with you until you actually wrote that withdrawal slip. And that's all the evidence we need, friend.
Well, you can't blame a guy for trying, can you? So I guess the money is all yours, Mrs. Horton. Myrna. Congratulations.
Listen, you may not believe this, but I'd give half this money to have Jerry back.
Of course, the moral of our story is that crime doesn't pay. Even if the insurance companies do. And now you see why we don't recommend our hero's method of getting rich. Because now, Mr. Nolan is going to be going somewhere that boasts no champagne, no fancy cars, and very little change of wardrobe. I'll be back shortly.
How many things can your family do together? Go to a movie? Go to a circus. Go on a picnic. Go on a vacation. Face it, in today's America, family fun is hard to come by. And with busy schedules, just getting the family together is not an easy thing to do. How would you like to have a little family fun every week? How would you like to learn together? How would you like to grow together? And how would you like to help your son get an edge on growing up? Cub Scouting is helping families like yours be a family. It sure helped ours. Today's Cub Scout program is just as much for families as it is for boys. So when your son wants to join a Cub Scout pack, remember to take along the whole family. That's what Cub Scouting is all about. For the Cub Scout pack nearest you, call the Boy Scouts of America. They're in the white pages of your phone book.
We have to admit that there's something fascinating about confidence games. They say that the essential ingredient of a good swindle is to play upon the greed of the victim. So the next time someone offers you a way to make an easy dollar, make sure you're not dealing with the wrong man. Our cast included Michael Tolan, Vicky Vola, Gilbert Mack, Mary Jane Higby, and Robert Dryden. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
What do you have in the pet carrier box?
I hate to tell you, but...
Oh, dear, not again.
I'm afraid so.
Oh, you are so careless with pets, Hugo. There's four cats dead already this year. You'll want to bury this one out by the roses, too.
If I may.
Well, it's getting a wee bit crowded, but... I'm sure you'll find a nice little spot. What happened to that pussycat of yours, Hugo?
She had an accident.
Oh, what sort of accident?
To tell you the truth, she sort of lost her head.
Oh, you leave your door open and your poor little cat rushes out into traffic, particularly on that busy street you live on. What do you expect? Well, dear, you'd better hurry. It's getting dark.
Yes, that's what I was waiting for.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Tonight's CBS Mystery Theater has been brought to you by AM&A's, downtown, and six suburban stores, including the new Locksport store. This is WBEN Buffalo.
W-Ben?
WBEN Buffalo. They were a television and radio station. WBEN, what is that? I think I was thinking, was that the NBC? I'm thinking WBEN television. I'm not sure. I think it was. Been a while.
I had forgotten that you hail from that area at one point in your life.
I did leave it in there for a couple reasons. I had a copy that was a little cleaner than that one, but it was, again, out of Seattle. And I said, you know what? Here's one out of Buffalo. And I liked how they opened up by opening up the station, you know?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, so. I was going to ask you a question about that. They were talking about kilohertz cycles or something to that effect.
Yeah, what was it, 9,000, something like that, Dale? Which means it means they had to, I think it was, that was the kind of wattage you had to, used to have to power down at night and come back up the next morning, yep. I think.
Yeah, because even then they were up to megahertz, weren't they?
No, they were still kilowatts. I think a lot of things in radio still measured in kilowatts.
Oh.
Is that, they just keep adding on the thousands, so, you know.
So I think we're now up to gigahertz.
It could be, yes, yes.
A whole lot of stuff, a whole lot of it.
So, whole lot of stuff. I think Dale, you had a... This tale kind of, it did. I like the way it ended. I did not expect it when I, you know, heard this one again. I love the ending. Anyway, Dale, I think you have something that we can learn from.
Oh, yeah. A, be ready. B... Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story. Yes, apologies to Gar. If you're going to play dead, make sure you're only playing. So all you get.
Very nice. Now wash your hands. Yeah.
Yes. Again.
It's the third time this week.
That's right.
Oh, and in the chat, hi, Fogsbane, good old Bob, and all the untold trillions and trillions of people listening. Good old Bob says AM radio stations are still in the kilohertz cycle. Is that right?
Yeah, and then and FM and megahertz. There you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember when FM finally started becoming popular in the early 70s here in Cleveland, where you had some all FM, like, and the album rock years, you know?
Yeah. Well, before that, it was basically educational stations and classical music is basically what they were before people decided, hey, listen to the sound that FM can give you. But those,
yeah.
You know, but if you're walking around with a transistor radio, you don't hear the difference. Because those transistor radios had these itty bitty little speakers that came out tinny anyway, if at all, and you couldn't tell the difference.
Guess not, but
it's funny because we have a
we have a
station. Now that they've been AM for years and years and years, WAKR, and they just bought an FM band, a kind of a small band, and since they've gone basically to a music format, you just flip it over from the AM to the FM, it's like a whole different world, and it is a whole different world. But when you listen to them in a sense side by side like that, that's when you really notice the difference. Because, Dale, we grew up with the AM radio and listening to all the stations and the programs
our
we
big
did.
Station
we didn't
here
know
was Wixie 1260 Super Radio.
That's right.
Yep.
Yep. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And, of course, depending upon the variety of radio that you have, so, you know, you have your AM, you have your FM. You have, of course, satellite radio. Then you have the long wave, which I know short wave, but long wave and short wave, AM, FM, and satellite. So those are all different.
Yep. And you know what, Dale? I think we still might have time to sneak in a jukebox number.
Oh,
let's do. I would say, is there anything left to play?
Oh, isn't that?
Not a whole lot.
Somebody's been the mist in their
teeth.
Oh, we got one.
Now, daily philosophy put to music. Practice what you preach. Larry Hooper, The Glee Club.
That's gonna count on Judgment Day. So practice what you preach. Now Deacon Joseph, here he runs a butcher shop. He to quote the Bible as he cuts a steak or chop. Well, Deacon, that sounds mighty fine, but tell me just how come are you charges for a pound of meat and a half a pound of thumb?
Practice what you preach.
Hallelujah.
Practice what you preach.
I'm here to tell you that it's what you do, not what you say, that's gonna count on Judgment Day.
So practice what you preach.
And Brother Brown, we hear your voice is singing in the choir. You've memorized a hymn book, that's a fact we all admire. But if St. Peter hears your song, I sort of calculate. He also hears them buttons you keep dropping in the plate. And then we've got a sister here who gossips quite a lot. She knows who's going where with who, and if they ain't, why not? Well, sister, if you ain't a step beside that golden throne, stop talking about your neighbor's sin, start thinking about your own.
Practice what you preach.
Hallelujah.
Practice what you preach.
I'm here to tell you that it's what you do, not what you say, that's gonna count on Judgment Day.
So practice what you preach.
Now, brothers and sisters, just practice what you preach.
Mm-hmm. I always practice what I preach, because if I do anything opposite of that, then I just was practicing.
That's right. Yes. Right. So what's happening next week after Lawrence Welk just played that song, Dale?
Not a damn thing. No, we are going to have we probably better get a lawyer, because it's going to be hit and run time.
Ooh.
Yeah. On Friday, all right, CBS Radio Workshop, Crisis, and a little thing with Dave involved heavily, WCRS Radio Stage. All right, so we've got that on Friday.
Yep.
And at CBS Radio Mystery Theater next Saturday with another hit and run.
Woo-hoo. Cool. Yeah. So look both ways when you're crossing the road, we may be coming at you.
I've been teaching my collie to sit before coming to a street.
Really? How's that working for you?
He listens, but I mean, I'm trying to get him to think of it on his own, to like sit down before he would cross the street. If he ever breaks loose, you know, maybe it'll save his life. I don't know. Make it a habit to sit before you cross the street.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It just gives the car more time to get there, buddy. You gotta be careful of that.
Yeah.
True. Hey, we do what we can. So yeah.
There you are.
Good time radio next week with a pleasant topic of hit and run. Oh, I like these titles of these stories. Grief drives a black sedan. The late corner. Oh gosh.
The latecomer. The latecomer.
Hit and running.
Yep. Yep.
Hit and running.
That's one of the stories I wrote. Yep.
That's all next Friday at 6:30 Eastern on a computer near you.
What? A computer? What's that?
A computer?
Yeah.
What's that?
Or tablet or whatever. I don't know. I still use a desktop.
What variety of contrivance is that?
Hey, real quick there. Any place where you get your podcast, Google, or any place you get your podcast, you can listen to Erie House Radio on there. But you know, you can always fall back on Blog Talk Radio to hear it there.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Nice. Oh, wow. Branching out. Cool.
Hey, thanks for listening to us live. We'll be back next week. It's Garlicle time.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her!
When next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I don't get it. He's usually a gentleman with the ladies.
Yeah, usually.
You didn't have to slam the door in a huff. Jeez.
Oh, really? Wow.
That's right. He could have taken his time and let it be a minute and a half.
There we go. Now we're off the live thing.
Alrighty. Yeah,
had to BS our way into it.
Yeah, because that was off more than what it was at the beginning of the show. I was like 20 seconds off at the beginning. It was more than that at the end. Blog Talk.
Yeah,
thanks, Blog Talk. That's why I had a dickens of a time dialing in.
I noticed you were in and out a few times at the beginning.
Yeah, and your friend didn't, your coworker didn't make it in again. I wonder if he had trouble logging in.
Don't know. Didn't hear from him on socials, medias, or anything.
Wait a second. I got a voicemail here. Maybe this is it. No,
I was waiting for him all day. I missed the goat. I missed the goat.
You never know when the goat is going to speak up.
He makes me feel warm and fuzzy.
Oh, do you have a Howie there, perchance? A Howie?
A Howie? I think I know it. Oh, yeah.
She meant a Howie scream. Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't have it.
Yeah! Yeah, there we go.
Oh, that's much. That's.
You feel better now?
Sort of a zen thing going on with that.
Yeah. That sound effect, that's like after taking a short break after a long ride on a train or a bus or something. Yeah.
Most definitely. But yes, very good story. Very good. I enjoyed that immensely.
I did not see that coming. I really didn't.
No, I didn't.
It's like a train.
Yep, that's why there's so many accidents. That's why there are 19,256 train crashes every year.
I didn't know there were that many
for
trains.
The last 10 years.
Neither did I.
I didn't either.
Wow.
And I wonder how many of those actually have crossing gates too, you know?
Yeah, because if you go into some of the rural areas, they pretty much just have nothing.
Yeah.
They actually, in my area, they were passing some legislation for that because there's a couple places in Amish area by us. They said, no, you got to put something up there to warn them because that's better than what was existing, just a railroad.
But what's
like,
stupid is watching
there.
People. Yeah. What's stupid is watching people go around them, you know.
Well, some of them are on a curve and stuff, and you just need to give people a little better heads up. Because it's like a 45-mile-an-hour road, and all of a sudden, train track.
And I've seen people do that even in the city when you have all the bells, the whistles, the sirens, the gates coming down. Somebody will say, just zip around through and over. Oh, goody. Let me get the camera out. This will be crash number 19,226.
and we forgot another train that's popular for pop culture. The one that comes out of the rocks after Wile E. Coyote paints a tunnel.
Oh, yeah, there's that one.
And he gets flattened by. And there's that one.
And there's Thomas the Train. We missed Thomas the Train.
Thomas the Tank Engine,
famous.
You mean?
Yeah,
the Great American Novel, the Great American Novel, The Little Engine That Could. I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can.
Yep.
How many times my life
was
destroyed by that story? Thinking I could when I couldn't.
Oh, wow.
Thinking I could when I couldn't. I blame the little engine, you know, hey, we need to write the story of the little engine that really couldn't. That's what the story needs to be.
The story of my
I
honeymoon.
Say class action.
No, I'm sorry. No, wait, stop. Stop. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a... Stop it. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. You know, you're quite right. A lot of movies made the train very integral in the schematics, the plot. What was it? The Marlene Dietrich, was it Shanghai Express, where she was known as the character of Shanghai Lily?
Yeah.
Great use of a train on the intro of Once Upon a Time in the West. That was a good...
Yeah, that's true.
Kind of a good showdown.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't it with Henry Fonda?
Henry Fonda, what's his name?
Charles Bronson?
On. Yes, thank you. Charles Bronson.
Ernest Borgnine. It had to be Ernest Borgnine.
And what else is it? Well, who's the other Western guy that was in that? Jason Robard, wasn't it, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was. Correct.
He was Cheyenne.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys were facing Charles Bronson, and they said, we're a horse short, and we're going to have to shoot you. And he's like, no, there's two horses too many, because there were two guys there. And he shoots them.
Oh, my gosh. Whoever knew that all the sweet, nice roles that Henry Fonda ever did, that was absolutely maniacal.
Well, the other thing about a train is the... a good part of that story took place. A guy that had leg problems had this incredibly modern back then train set up so he could get around and run his business and so forth. Mostly crooked stuff, but that was a cool train. And then wasn't there a cool train in? I know there was in the movie, but Wild Wild West. Didn't they also have a really
Wanderer. Yeah, it was called The Wanderer. And what a total steampunk. The innovated steampunk. I mean, it had everything. The panels that moved with the secret passageways through the train, and also where you had all the weapons and you had your telegraph thing there. I want one.
And a very satisfying train crash. Bridge on the River Kwai.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you got the whistle song as you were watching it go down. Yep.
Way before he became Obi-Wan Kenobi. Alec Guinness. Sir Alec Guinness.
Very funny. The movie The Geisha Boy is one of my favorite Jerry Lewis movies because the relationship he has with the little Japanese boy is so, so cute. But also film, the little Japanese boy's grandfather was the same actor that played the Japanese commander Bridge on the River Kwai. And he's dressed up in a Japanese soldier uniform, and he's got all these guys sawing away making a little bridge for his grandson. And they're whistling the theme, you know.
The theme, Colonel Bogey, yeah.
And then Jerry Lewis looks back, and you see Alec Guinness riding on the train or riding on the cart, and he does a double take. What?
My ex-father-in-law was an extra in there because he was drafted and was sent over to Korea. And parts of that were filmed over there, and they used his battalion as extras.
No kidding. That is cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, there were a lot of people.
Maybe
the
only cool thing about my father-in-law, ex-father-in-law. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Neither my father-in-law was cool. Both of them, actually. My first mother-in-law was cool. And that's all. I will not speak ill
of the rest of the family.
I will not speak ill of the dead. It is considered
rude
in some cultures.
Yeah. that and the fact one good Ouija board and you're going to be chased around all over.
No, there's some things you know what, when a certain time passes, you let go. You let go of things.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Some people can hold a grudge.
Only for comedic purposes. That's all.
Wow.
That's all.
Yep.
Right. So you had a relative that, or ex-former relative that served in Korea. I don't know how many, this ex-former relative who served in Korea. Who knew? I wonder if he knew that the muddy streets that he'd be walking on would be Yo-Yo Gundam style. Do 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 do.
Who knew? Who knew?
They didn't know. It was a lot easier to do that than some of the other work they had to do. So,
did your dad serve at all, Dave?
No.
My
dad was kind
father,
of
yeah.
In between. Plus, he had an ear issue. My father did. When he was young, he had ear issues, so they pierced his eardrums. So that didn't help him.
Yeah,
that's how they used to do medicine back then. Well, he's having trouble. Let's just go ahead and pierce his eardrum.
Yeah, let the sap out. Jeez. Barbarians.
Oh, my. Barbarians. I'm kidding.
Although he didn't fly,
he
was in the Civil Air. Yeah, although he didn't fly, he was in the Civil Air Patrol. And made award-winning scrapbooks, if nothing else. Which is now actually being handed over. It's actually now being handed over to Wright State, his scrapbooks on the Civil Air from the 1950s.
Ooh. My adoptive father served in World War II. I guess he was drafted. I don't know. He ended up in the Army Air Corps, which was the predecessor to the Air Force.
To the Air Force, yeah.
And his primary job was flying in planes and, like, taking pictures of, all right, here's where we succeeded. Here's where it didn't go so well. And, you know, just documenting stuff.
Reconnaissance. Right, reconnaissance.
But, yeah, but he also, I know he spent time on the Philippines, and there were times you had to dive into foxholes because there'd be a strafing run by a Japanese plane, you know?
Yeah.
They were known to do that, yep.
He was at Guadalcanal, but not. It was after the battle was over, but he was there.
I wonder when he was flying recon if he saw any of those quote-unquote Foo Fighters. Not the band. This is before
the
band.
I know what you mean. Fighting that Foo, wherever it is. No, he never said anything to me about it, you know.
A lot of pilots didn't say anything because they didn't want to be told, hey, you're drinking that jungle juice again, aren't you?
Yeah, but you know what? Mm-hmm. 20 years later, telling your kids something is a little different than telling your sergeant right after it happens.
point taken.
Your sergeant might say something crazy like,
hello. I'm Mr. Red.
Or worse.
Make me a Sergeant Jackson.
There you go. That's more like it.
That's better. That's more sensible.
That's
even
comedy gold.
Yep.
That too.
Yeah.
That is also comedy gold. How we love the goat.
Oh, yeah. Well, gentlemen, I must be away. I'm staying away from train tracks from now on, now that Dave has enlightened us that 19,000 and counting in this country alone. I don't care to be the 20th thousand. I'm staying away from them. I'm going to try and find ways to drive avoiding them. I don't know how I'm going to do that. Do you know that there are train tracks that are completely abandoned, meaning, you know, you'll see a tree growing right in the middle of the track.
Yeah, there's some by me.
Oh,
there
okay.
used to be a train that ran from Wellington There's still a track that runs like, I don't know, a little tourist runs or whatever. But there used to be a train that ran all the way to the Terminal Tower, Dave. In fact, if you look at the Terminal Tower, there used to be stops in Oberlin and Wellington.
Wow, I did not know that.
Way out here. So, yeah, you could back technically then. You could commute. It probably still took 2 hours, but... or an hour and a half or something.
Got to stop at every stop, you know?
Well, yeah, that's it. It's like it's like a big, long...
Yeah, stop at every...
Rapid transit thing.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Mrs. Jones is
making
an apple pie.
Not so rapid transit, yeah. Mm. Not so rapid transit, yeah.
It's probably whatever the predecessor was, some kind of two tracks.
Now you had to stop at everyone's house because they'd say, oh, you want a slice of apple pie? Okay, we're stopping here for some apple pie, everybody. Oh, and about 12 feet up the street there, 12 feet up the tracks there, they're having some fresh hot coffee. We're stopping up there as well. And, oh, she didn't have any sugar. So we're going to stop 5 more feet up the track because this one didn't have any sugar, but... get me some fresh cream. They're milking that cow right now.
Yeah, now the mule that's pulling the train is actually needs to stop and eat. So.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking if it was that long ago we had a train, it probably was mule driven or something. Oxen.
Yeah. Oxen cart.
Ox cart.
Okay.
Ox cart rides into town, kids. Pile in.
Well, I'm glad the Amish are getting a proper train warning signal. I mean,
well, not just them. There's just some, and there's farmland out there, and some people came around and said, yeah, this stuff is a little dangerous. So nothing in particular happened, but we had one tip over. What the heck was in it? Was it like tons and tons of onions or something horrible? I mean, it was far enough away from me. I didn't have to smell it, but whatever it was rancid and horrible.
Oh,
and I don't know if there was a defect in the track or what.
I remember the great onion wreck of 2012.
Something like that.
I remember the great tofu calamity of 2022.
What would be great is if like there was just a boxcar full of popcorn, and then there was a fire.
Oh. Yes, the Redenbacher Express.
Yeah, exactly. That would be freaking hilarious.
It's snowing.
It's snowing.
Ooh, it's buttery too.
Yeah, boy, the butter flavored stuff.
I went to Bob Evans this morning, and they had
down
popcorn
on
the cob. I was down on the farm. They had popcorn on the cob, and this popcorn, you put it, I guess, in the microwave, and
I've had that
pops right off the corn. I never really paid attention to that before.
I got mine at Grandpa's Cheese Barn in Ashland.
Yeah, it was probably cheaper.
I don't know. They're pretty pricey at Grandpa's Cheese Barn. Everything is pricey.
They are.
It's good stuff, but it's really pricey.
That chain of homespun restaurants with a store in the
Country kitchen?
Is that it?
I thought that's
of a... You talking about Cracker Barrel?
That's the one.
Cracker Barrel.
Thank you. Yeah, where they serve up the critter of the day. So.
Yeah, it depends what was crossing the road. We don't know what it is. We'll see what Zed drags in.
I think we Al and I did a commercial for Billy Bob's. We might have even done it here, Dale. Billy Bob's
Roadkill Grill or something.
Well, Roadkill and Leftover Cafe. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yum yum.
Yep. Good for hobos and family eating.
Yes, check out damn vittles.
Ooh-wee. Just like granny.
There was a good, and I forget, I think it was Suspense, a train story. A gentleman.
Sorry about that.
Is involved in some
predict,
kind.
Can't always predict a goat.
Yep. A gentleman gets on the train, jumps on. He's running from the law for something and gets into a fight with a guy who's also criminal in nature and switches like identities with him, much like this guy in this story.
Ah.
But he comes to a different bad end. It's good stuff. It was an early Suspense. I want to say a 40s, like maybe
okay.
late 40s or in the middle of their run.
I'd have to try to look that up. Yeah.
Yep.
With that, gentlemen, I simply must be away. Thank you for all the smash and burning and crashing and statistics.
Destruction. Yep.
Thanks for the accidents. Okay, anyway.
It cheers me up.
Well, I'll snap on the three spotlights.
Oh,
there you
thank
go.
You very much.
Ding, ding.
Ding, ding. Mr. Durante, the stage is yours.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Go off the stage.
One
more to say, but
good night. He's on the railroad
tracks again. We've had a few laughs.
What was the last thing the goat said?
Horrible up we
sing. Whoops.
I don't
know. Uh-oh.
Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Wow, 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 wow.
Do you mind signing off the radio?